Welcome to the Marketing Unboxed podcast. I'm Travis Scott.
And I'm Allie Schwanke. And we're here to take the lid off of what's good in marketing. Through our own riffing on marketing topics and guest interviews, we're going to pull out some of the basics of marketing and go deep into more complex topics.
So go for a walk or kick back and listen to what we're pulling out for you next. Welcome to episode 3 of Marketing Unboxed. I'm your co-host, Travis L. Scott, and in the first two episodes, I was flying solo, interviewing Ryan Glanzer and Michael Schein. In this episode, you get to meet my new co-host, Allie Schwanke. Allie is the CEO and founder of SimpleStrat, a content marketing agency for B2B tech companies and a Platinum HubSpot partner. We talked about quite a few different topics, including starting and building an agency, content marketing, better ways marketing professionals could communicate, and her recent experience of moving to a completely remote working environment. Enjoy. Hey, Allie.
How's it going today?
Good. How are you?
Doing well. It's Friday as we record this, so the weekend's looking nice.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I love Fridays. For me, it's a business development day.
And oh, nice. And
creative day. So we're here with Allie Schwanke, who is a co-host of the podcast, Marketing Unboxed, and thought we would take this opportunity to introduce her so listeners know a little bit more about who you are and where you come from, and then maybe we'll have a topic at the end that we can riff about as we wrap it up.
That sounds great. I'm always up for riffing marketing or anything related to it.
So Allie, you are the CEO and founder at SimpleStrat. And to keep things consistent with, you know, an introductory question that we plan to ask people, when you were growing up, what did you want to be when you grew up?
So it really depends on what time of my life you would have asked me that question. When I was in, I would say, elementary school, I was obsessed with weather, and I still very much am. I loved volcanoes. I loved hurricanes. I loved tornadoes, you know, thunderstorms, floods. I was just very infatuated with the earth and kind of all the science around the earth. And it's funny because I was a child of the late 80s and early 90s, and I would check out an encyclopedia. Like I would check out letter V for volcano, and then I'd be like, oh, what else is in here? You know, kind of precursor to the internet. But that was a definite direction for me for a while, until I realized that I really did like helping people. And so I needed something that was more than just science. And so I wanted to be an electrical engineer, and then eventually centered on, I wanted to be a doctor, went to college to become a doctor, and clearly not doctoring today, so you know how that worked out. But found myself just loving the problem solving side of things, and you know, kind of at a whimsical way, ended up in marketing, and you know, the rest is history.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting how we end up where we are, and the winding road that it takes to get where we are. And I think marketing is one of those things. Sure, a lot of people go to school and get a degree in marketing or communications or advertising. But I think a lot of people are in the business and have no formal education around marketing. It just fits their personality and what they enjoy and what they kind of gravitated to.
Yeah. I think if you look at a lot of things that I would even do as a child, and even today, I find myself being very curious and wanting to provoke or I guess evoke action among people. So I would sell greeting cards door to door to little kids and then their parents. And I found that enjoyable to both, you know, earn cash as well as find the right thing for them. Like I could sell this cat stationery all day long, because I knew that people wanted to have pen pals. You wanted to be the coolest pen pal, and the coolest pen pals had the coolest stationery, you know, that kind of stuff. So I think the problem solving aspect of it is really what drew me into marketing and more, I guess, into marketing from a business perspective, and not just to create, you know, quote unquote, cool campaigns. So I never went through the advertising college. I went through business and science colleges in college. And I find myself just looking at every single marketing opportunity as a problem to be solved. And I think if we all did that, we'd probably end up with a lot more positive ROI discussions, you know, in the marketing department.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think you hit on something that with marketing stationery, which you also mentioned the coolest stationery. And so I think it's lost on people all the time about marketing, what marketing really is, because most of the time we're not marketing to needs, we're marketing to wants. And the wants go a lot deeper psychologically with people than we think. And so you weren't really marketing stationery, you were marketing a feeling and status mm-hmm. among peers. So I think that's a great introduction to how marketing really is done.
Yeah. And I think everybody will say, I'm not, they use the phrase, I'm not a marketer, but, and then they say something. And I think the problem is we are all marketers of the things that we think are important to us. And so, you know, as a teenager, I'll tell you, like I have a teenager, he will market his face off to make sure that I will give him, you know, gas money or that I let him go to a friend's house. Like he has his case. He knows what's important to him. He tries to spin it so it's important to me. And yet when we enter a business setting, we suddenly get into this, I have to do it this way and I have to be like this. And all of a sudden it gets really slimy and it gets really, you know, call today and act now. And if we just think back to the, what's the last thing that I wanted to achieve from someone else and how did I go about doing it? That logical process of empathy, understanding, and the right, you know, call to action per se for that person is simply all that we do every day. It's just doing it in business.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think to something that I learned from Seth Godin is a lot of what I've learned is from him. If you are involved in change of some kind, you're marketing. If you're changing mm-hmm. someone's mind, changing an outcome, changing a decision, changing anything, that's marketing. Mm-hmm. Right. So yeah, I think everyone is a marketer, no matter what you do.
Yeah.
I mean, I market to my wife all the time about different things. You know, I'm trying to change her mind and change my outcome all the time.
Yeah, definitely. I wouldn't say that I'm as successful with my spouse as I am with, you know, selling HubSpot services possibly, but all of us have those skills. It's just recognizing kind of when we turn them on naturally and when it feels a little bit more forced. And so if you can get out of that, like I have to do things this way, I think we become much more successful.
So as we mentioned at the beginning, you're the CEO and founder at Simple Strat. What is Simple Strat and where are you located? We can talk about that too.
Sure. Well, that's an interesting question for us to answer as of lately, because we moved to being a fully remote company. And myself, I'm based right outside of Omaha, Nebraska. And so for the longest, like when the company first started, we were based here and we had employees here. And that was pre-pandemic. That was pre kind of what we do today. We started out as more of a marketing strategy firm and did a lot of local work. It was probably the natural progression of someone starting a company out of having been a solopreneur for a while and then building a team. But we have more than 75% of our team lives outside of the state now. And so we're now still based as a company address here in Nebraska, but we have employees in Pennsylvania, in Colorado, in Boston, in New Jersey and all over. So I really enjoy the remote aspect of being able to find really great talent. And it's not dependent upon geography, but balancing the time zones has been a new thing for us because we have someone in all the way from West Coast to the East Coast time zone. And then really just making sure that we have self-starters, people who are very responsible, highly attentive to communication, and you know, in an environment like ours, you just have to have a healthy sense of paranoia that you're doing what's asked of you. And if you're that person that doesn't have that sense of paranoia, it's going to show up pretty quickly.
And your business model was also, you know, not just in hiring and remote workforce, but your target market was local too, right?
at one point?
Right. So when we first started, I have a pretty strong network of folks that I've worked with over the years. I've developed a pretty strong reputation of having a strategy mind first before we jump into just a slew of tactics. And so that was really the basis of the company. I myself was sick of the founders or executives or even marketers looking for an agency to do X. And it's like, well, I want you to come in and do X. Well, it's like those home improvement shows where they haven't even figured out like what's behind the wall. They don't know what's going to happen. And so they essentially wanted what felt like a crystal ball. Tell me what we need to do and we'll do it. And I said, you really have to have a handle on your strategy first. Why do customers choose you? Again, all the fundamentals that we learn out in business school or in marketing just were being missed. And so we developed a very specific process to walk people through to nail that down before we do anything else. We call that the blueprint. So that was how we first started. We did those blueprints locally. We did a lot of local work. And then we just found that where we're based in Nebraska, I mean, we're a conservative state. Most of the companies in our region, in the Midwest in general, not just Nebraska, in general, in the Midwest are very sales first, marketing second. And they tend to throw marketing in the sales department as like a supportive to the sales team. And I knew from personal experience that marketing can be a driver and a lead ahead of the sales efforts. And if you do it the right way, you have a healthy blend of outbound and inbound. And just too many teams were not wanting to throw enough resources at that locally. So we just really decided to take our efforts online and go digital. And since then, we generate our own leads, you know, through our own efforts. I sell, but I don't cold call anybody. And most of our clients are in larger metro areas. Outside of, we have one client in Nebraska and everybody else is probably West Coast, East Coast, Chicago, you know, larger metros like that.
Yeah. So that was probably a game changer when you realized that the constraint you had of being local really was kind of invented and you didn't really need to have that constraint.
Yeah, I think the hard part for me was the trying to convince people that marketing is one of those things that everyone recognizes how we as humans, you know, get in shape and lose weight. And yet there's still so many companies that are in business selling supplements and quick fix solutions that's never going to go away. We're still going to have that industry. And there's still a lot of people in the marketing field. And I don't think it's ever going to go away that just, they see marketing as a direct response. I put money in, I get money out. And if they revisit the fact that marketing is what we learn in business school, again, you know, product place, promotion, price, people, process, and physical evidence, like there's actually seven of them now as opposed to four. If we look at all of those components, that's what actually a healthy marketing strategy looks like. But each company is going to have a different emphasis on any of those. So you might have a really strong pricing strategy that really doesn't need too much promotion because you alone are going to win by simply the way that you're pricing your products. And all of that gets into business strategy, which I think is tough because sometimes too many organizations are asking companies like yours and mine to do business strategy. And we're like, no, you asked us to help market your products. But I can't help you overcome the fact that you're the highest price leader in the market. Nobody was willing to pay that amount of money for your product, right? And that's a business strategy conversation, which, you know, we do get pulled into that just because it's part of the marketing conversation.
Yeah. Yeah. More of a kind of a positioning thing, but, mm-hmm. but really bigger than that.
Yeah. It also comes down to, I think in today's world, I put physical evidence in there and you and I might call it things like social proof. Nobody wants to be the first to do anything, regardless of how innovative someone says they are. They're like, ooh, I don't really want to take the first risk of being your first customer in this line of business. Who else has worked with you? And what are, like, we all want to mitigate our risks in some way. And so we expect someone to have told us what it's like to work with that company before we get involved. So reviews, testimonials, and that kind of stuff is just so important. And there's still a lot of companies that are missing a lot of those pieces in their marketing.
Yeah. Yeah. Social proof is enormous, especially when everything is digital now. And mm-hmm. I mean, word of mouth is still critical and it's still a great component, but it, you know, with fewer in-person events and networking opportunities to meet new people, you know, that's becoming more challenging as well. So yeah, building that trust immediately. And that's what testimonials and social proof will help do, to where that person sees your website, sees those things, and can say, okay, so people like me or my company are working with Simple Strat. So I should be working with them as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's a social proof piece. I think, you know, I think one of the things that, you and I have talked about being HubSpot providers and HubSpot partners, I think one of the things that's been challenging is when you get to a level, like we started as a local company, every company goes through these evolutions of who they become when they grow up. And to move from local, I remember us having the conversation of, right now we're competing with X, Y, and Z, these agencies that were in our city. If we achieve our vision of moving out of our local market into these regional markets with like industry or expertise specificity, we're now going to be competing against, or we're then going to be competing against, you know, A, B, and C. And then once we achieve that level, then we're going to compete against, you know, this other whole slew. So this last year, we realized we're now competing with the people that we talked about 3 years ago. And we are being like, we want to deal with a client that was considering agency XYZ in a different city. And there's no way 3 years ago we would have ever been on the radar of those folks in the same conversation. But I think what's interesting is we're now in a different environment where they had that reputation 3 years ago and they've maintained it. But what we've built in the meantime is a slew of video content and a slew of written content and a ton of thought leadership that's made it look like in the last year we've become more experts than they have. And it's simply because, again, the people I talk to are like, Ali, I've watched all of your videos. I've listened to all of your podcast episodes. They've gotten to know me and my company so well that regardless of how long that company has been in business, they just feel like they already know me. And I think that's what we're seeing in today's world is that's the piece that a lot of teams are afraid to produce content because they're afraid that, well, if I produce it today, it might be outdated tomorrow. So we're just going to stick to written. Stick to written stuff that we can update pretty easily. But, you know, video and audio like this are really, they like change the way our brain interprets trust because we just have that, like your voice is distinct to you, Travis. And if I hear your voice, I automatically associate it with feelings of whatever, you know, expertise or value that you've driven in any conversation you've had with me.
Yeah. And that's such a great point about videos and audio, video and audio content of just, I think it humanizes things in a non-human environment that is digital. It brings that human element that's missing. And I think it's even more important now that we've all been going through this pandemic for the last 18 plus months, that we don't have that human interaction that we used to. Yeah, we have Zoom, but you know, we don't have those interactions and we're kind of missing those. And if you can see someone in a video or hear their audio several times, you get familiar with how they talk, you know, how they think. And so when you jump on a call with them, it feels like you've known them for a while. Mm-hmm. And it could have only been a few months. So yeah, I think it's a huge opportunity for a lot of companies that if you're not creating that kind of content, it's vitally important.
Mm-hmm, definitely.
And so you are Simple Strat is a platinum HubSpot partner, which is really impressive. It's a very big achievement. So what was that growth like going from a small kind of locally focused agency to then becoming a platinum partner? What did you kind of learn along the way?
Yeah, we were talking about this in a group that I was part of yesterday, not necessarily the journey from small to platinum necessarily, but it was that question of like, what would you do differently? And I don't know, I'm a big believer that there's a lot of the things that you have today because of the stuff that you went through. And so even if I would have done things differently, I only have that context now because of the experiences that we went through. And I think what we realized is, so there was a lot of conversation around whether or not you should attach your wagon to a specific software product. And so there's folks that believe that, you know, you need to diversify your focus in order for you, like that's kind of an oxymoron, diversify your focus, but diversify your service line so that you don't get all your eggs in one basket and, you know, in a sense. But I think one conversation we had initially about what we thought it would take for us to go from we're a new provider, new to HubSpot, to Platinum Agency is I think we thought that there were going to be some things that were super, super important to us in getting there that turned out to be not as helpful. And one of those things is I used to be a Salesforce admin. And so I recognized the power of user group communities. I knew the Marketo community was very active as well. And I knew HubSpot had a user community too. So we run the user group for our region. But like I said, in a couple minutes ago, our region isn't as sophisticated, like geographically, in how they approach marketing. So the number of people and the number of companies that are really leveraging tools like HubSpot is pretty small. And so for us to really have enough business to generate from those user groups and relationships just really didn't do it for us. And I think we only realized that in hindsight, after we started creating a lot of this YouTube content and social media content, where I had told people for, Travis, 2 years that we were a HubSpot agency. And until we produced these HubSpot videos and just started, you know, every week leaking them out, suddenly people were like, oh my gosh, you're like a YouTube or you're like a HubSpot expert. Despite how many calls and how many emails I'd sent them, they suddenly like woke up to the idea that like, wow. And so that's been really interesting for me is people want to attach you to it. They want to put you in a category. They want to help you understand that they have no idea what type of HubSpot expert you are. They have no idea that there's like four different hubs, like all of the stuff that you and I might take for granted. They don't know that. And that's why they have to call someone like us to figure that out. But I think what I learned is it's okay to attach your wagon to a software product that is continually growing and evolving. I think it would have been tough to attach ourselves to a platform that, you know, had a mass exodus of people from the platform. We were seeing more and more people adopting it than we were seeing them kick it out. We saw a pretty big attentive direction from HubSpot directly to us as agencies to like really get in part of their conversation. But I think the other thing I realized is it's kind of like buying a gym membership. There's a certain amount of value you're going to get by simply inking the contract, but you have to go to the gym. And so with being a HubSpot partner, like once we started really leaning into the things that made us unique and us super valuable as a partner and not trying to do what other partners were doing, I think that's when we started seeing us as a company. Like that sounds so duh, but I don't think we knew what our inherent value was initially. I think we had to figure it out, just like you and I were talking about. But our inherent value, and I have this personally, I think, and so does my co-founder, is we just give it straight to you. This is what it is. This is how it works. These are the problems you're going to have. And we don't try to sell you on it. We want to solve your problems and find the right solution for you. And that's the whole approach of our company. And I think it's quite frankly, a fresh taste in the marketplace, as opposed to like selling you that HubSpot's going to solve all your problems overnight. Cause it's just not true. It's not, right. You're going to be disappointed in me and you're going to regret buying it if it doesn't do all the things, you know?
I'm going through that right now. I'm new to the HubSpot game and navigating that very question of what value do I provide? How do I stand out in a crowded place? And each day it becomes more clear. And I think it's kind of like creativity, right? I want to build an agency that is a platinum partner at some point, but I know that's not going to happen this year, next, maybe not next year, but how do I get there? And what are those goals? You had mentioned, you know, in 3 years, we want to be like X and another three, like Y. I think that's the right approach to take, because you're not going to go from zero to platinum and competing with larger, more established agencies. And so where is that niche that you can fit into in phases? And I think you don't know what you don't know, right? And so mm-hmm. Sure, as you've made those leaps, whether they were delineated or not, or just kind of happened over, you know, on their own. And next thing you know, oh, we're in this space now. It's just like how when any company grows, you know, and I think some founders have a tough time with this. I've seen it in startups I've worked for, where the game changes as you get larger. Mm-hmm. Things mm-hmm. become more complex. It takes a different mindset. It's really hard to hold on to that kind of startup, nimble mentality and ability when you mm-hmm. become larger. And so I don't think you can predict those things until you're bumping up right next to it. I know that Cal Newport, and I forget what he refers to that as in his book, So Good They Can't Ignore You. But he kind of talks about that with creativity or becoming an expert in anything, you can't really see what's at step C or D until mm-hmm. you have gone through steps A and B to get that context and ideas and see patterns that then, okay, now I can see C. You know, I think ideas happen like that, you know, we were talking before I pressed record about creativity. And I think people just are always wondering how people come up with ideas, and they don't just come up mm-hmm. with ideas. It's a progression of one idea leads to the next, which leads to the next, which is kind of an iteration, right? And you can't get to that final idea unless you had those previous ideas. So, mm-hmm. so business is kind of the same.
Yeah. I can't think of the name of the book. I think it's The Business of Expertise. It's David Baker, I think, is the author. Mm-hmm. He works a lot. Like, he does a lot of work on helping people like really niche down their business. But he puts it this way. He says, you know, you have to do the same type of work over and over to be exposed to the same set of problems and solutions. And in order to find patterns then help you find the right keys to essentially plug into those. And the more you do that, the more you become an expert mm-hmm. and the more people pay you for that expertise. And I think that's, you know, kind of going back to the early days of SimpleStrat, I think I'd done enough of that. Like, I'd been in my career for, you know, a decade or more when I started, was it a decade? Maybe a little less than a decade when I started kind of my solo journey. Cause I started a business before SimpleStrat. But I think that I had seen enough of that based on my work. But when you talk about bringing new team members into an agency environment, their ability to execute on marketing solutions, they don't have that whole realm of all the experience that lies in your head based on your previous patterns and identification. So what I've learned, and my co-founder is like super, super honed in on this, is in order for our team to move faster, for us to grow faster, we have to solve the same number of problems, the same types of problems over and over and over in more quantity than our competitors do. And most agencies find that to be very difficult, because most agency owners are like, you know, oh my gosh, the land of opportunity. Everyone has marketing problems. I can help everybody. But in fact, it becomes difficult to maintain profitability because everyone's statement of work looks different and everyone's solution is custom and all of that kind of stuff. So in the last 2 years, as we've been working down this like very specific HubSpot consulting route, because one arm of our business is just HubSpot consulting, regardless of the inbound programs and the growth marketing and all that kind of stuff, it's just HubSpot. And I have probably 5 to 7 discovery calls with people that convert from our YouTube content each week. And by take that times 52 weeks, I've got, you know, 250-ish conversations a year with people and their challenges in HubSpot. And I can tell you based on that people, it's not as intuitive as you and I think it is, because one, we have marketing background. Two, we've worked in a ton of MarTech. And three, we probably are much quick learners than the average, you know, professional worker because of what we do. And because of that, the things that you and I might take for granted in a platform like HubSpot is very challenging for certain people based on their scenario. So I can sell HubSpot training over and over and over again because of these, you know, very fundamental challenges that continue to come up because of all of the 250 plus calls that I've been on. So it's that kind of stuff that I think when you start realizing both the insights you gather from being specific, and then also as a business owner, you're like, oh, I can now hire people that fit this because I know I have better parameters around the definition of that role than just like, you need to know about marketing automation, which is very hard to hire someone successfully if they have to know Salesforce and Pardot and Eloqua and HubSpot and, you know, so on and so forth.
Yeah, that taking for granted what we know and how easy mm-hmm. things are for us because we've done it a lot. It's interesting that you mentioned that, because just yesterday I sat down with Ann Long, who's the owner of the co-working space that I'm in, Liberty Lake Co-working here in Liberty Lake, Washington. And as a favor, I helped her get started with the free CRM of HubSpot and set some things up. And we were in a conference room going through it. And one, it was good to see, because it was nice to see someone trying to navigate it and see where were they getting hung up, what was confusing to them, even though it was the free version and it was a favor. I came out of that hour and a half time having learned a lot about, you know, how people view the software and what's not intuitive right out of the gate. And so yeah, that was a good learning experience for me and made it a great use of time.
Yeah, I think that really meeting people where they are, that is one of the, I think, biggest disconnects that a lot of companies have. It also tends to hamstring product development, because what you and I might think is a really good feature added might be awful, because we're simply forgetting that we already have subject matter expertise. So much of the marketing that you see today that's really effective is, I just call it literally like dumb marketing. It's if we would just connect with the consumer and the customer in the language that they use, and we use much more pictorial, interactive, straightforward language, I think we'd all be in a better place.
Yeah, absolutely. And just this morning, since today is a business development day for me, which doesn't just mean sales and prospecting and outreach, it means putting work into my website, my copy, really narrowing down who I am for and what I do. And so today, and I'm a big fan of the concept of stealing like an artist. And so why recreate the wheel when you can just go look at people doing what you are going to do or do already, see how they present themselves, and not just for ideas of how to present yourself, but how not to. And I looked at several that one of my HubSpot account managers on the sales side, and we were talking about other companies who are doing what I'm doing and focusing on the things I'm focusing on. He gave me some links, and this morning I was looking at them. I wanted to see, you know, how are they communicating their value and what they do to people? And I saw their websites and immediately thought what you just said of why can't companies and marketers are notorious for this, and just anybody who has a deep expertise, they forget what it's like to not, and they start talking in their language that isn't what other people talk. Right. And so that's what they were doing, and talking about things like a MarTech stack, which we know what that is. And it seems like, you know, but if I'm talking to someone at a manufacturing company or engineering firm, which is, you know, some of my target markets, they'll be like, what the hell is a MarTech stack? What does that even mean? And so I would have lost them in the very opening sentence on my website, right? Mm-hmm. And maybe not that I lost them because they didn't know what it was, but also because maybe they're intimidated to talk to me because they don't know what it is, and they don't know if they need it. They don't know if they have it. They probably have it. Most likely they have a MarTech stack, but they don't know that's what it's called. And so yeah, one of the things that I made a point of as I was writing my copy for my site this morning was, how can I say this in a way that non-marketers will understand what it is? And so that was kind of what I focused on this morning. But yeah, I don't know why. I mean, I know why. It's difficult because you know what you know, and you really forget what it was like to be in that sponge mode, curious mode. But yeah, I think you just forget what it's like and how to communicate and teach people who are just starting or don't really know what it is.
Yeah. I think it's a little bit of that. And then it's also it's hard for very smart. If you're a very smart person, there's two types of very smart people. There's very smart people that are smart and want to make sure other people know that they're smart. And then there's very smart people who have gotten very intelligent by listening to other people and observing and recognizing that the key to their intelligence is understanding what they don't know. And I think the first person that I just described is very difficult to even, they just, for whatever reason, whether it's arrogance or ego or something, they are so, they can say they're open to the idea that they're not right, but mentally they haven't gotten on board with that. And so regardless of all of that, they'll do things like, well, the competitor talks this way. Well, since the competitor talks this way, we have to talk this way. And the answer is, well, we don't know how well the competitor's marketing is working, or maybe no one's even going to the competitor's homepage because they actually have their leads coming somewhere else. And so it's that the second person who I would much rather take, and even employees, like if an employee is willing to say, these things I know for sure, and these things I don't, so I'm going to go and find out. That's the kind of intelligence that I think is going to be, and that's that critical thinking piece that so much of the world is starving for right now. They want the people that are critically thinking, like, why isn't this page converting? Could it have something to do with the fact that no one has any frame of reference for what we're talking about? But I do think that you have to be willing to be wrong in order for you to just be a better business professional in general.
Exactly. Yeah. And a book I read that kind of changed my mentality about that was The Art of Possibility. And one of the things that they talk about in there is that everything's invented. And once I started to think about that and realize, yeah, everything is invented. And we're making this up as we go for almost everything. And so there is no right way or wrong way. And just because someone says this is the way to do it doesn't mean that's really the way to do it. And I think that kind of mentality of becoming an expert and feeling so sure that you have the answers, I think just opens the door to cognitive entrenchment, which then can doom you, I think, because it just puts you in this box and you're not as willing to learn and be wrong. And you put too much value on being right. And I think that is something I think about a lot and want to try to prevent as I move through my career.
Yeah, I think, I mean, getting back to kind of the title of this podcast, you know, Marketing Unboxed, I think sometimes people expect us to have this, you know, magic box of tricks that there's something amazing that we dig into our Mary Poppins bag and pull it out. And that's really only possible if we have context, understanding, repetitive problem solving in a certain market. Like I can tell you based on working in B2B that if you have problem X, I probably am going to recommend problem, you know, solution X, Y, or Z. But all of that's still dependent upon your situation, your competitive landscape, and all of that kind of stuff. At the core of it really is just, let me ask better questions and be willing to be wrong and learn. And that's really what makes great marketing. And over time you build expertise that way.
Yeah. Yep. And you know, when I was the director of marketing at a company just recently, there were times where I had to tell the president that we're not magicians as marketers. We're not going to solve every problem the company has, and don't put too much onus. I mean, I loved having, you know, that kind of like, that you know, his mentality that marketing can fix a lot of things and can do a lot of things, and he valued marketing. The president of the company did, and that's a great place to be. Versus leadership that doesn't value creativity and everything that really has to happen with marketing. But yeah, you could put too much emphasis on it, and to make a Star Trek reference, I'm more of a Star Wars person, but I've watched the old Star Treks. I like the old ones. From back in the day. And just reminds me of a scene where Bones says to Captain Kirk, "Damn it, Jim, I'm a doctor, not a magician." And so I say that a lot. I'm a marketer, not a magician. Damn it, Jim, I'm a marketer, not a magician. And so yeah, I think setting those expectations is key, especially with new clients. And or if you work at a company, if you're new, setting those expectations that we're not going to solve every problem.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So yeah, thanks a lot, Allie, for hopping on, and looking forward to doing the podcast with you and some upcoming interviews that we have scheduled.
Absolutely. I think that the concept of the show, I love the idea of unboxing kind of what's behind the scenes. And the guests that we have coming up are everything from personal branding to self-improvement to measurement and analytics and content. So definitely in for a treat as we move forward.
Yep, absolutely. All right. Thanks a lot.
Yep. Thank you.
So that wraps up this week's show. Thanks for listening. If you'd like to learn more about today's topic or guest, we've got some links for you provided over in the show notes. And don't forget to subscribe to the show and share your review. That really helps others find the show and get it into their network as well. So until next time, I'm Allie.
And I'm Travis. And remember, when you get outside of your comfort zone, it just means you're headed in the right direction. Keep an open mind and keep learning. And we're out.